Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
This is Classical Ideas with Greg Soden. The worlds of podcasting, music, and writing brought me to find and start corresponding with today's guest, Chris Grasso. I found Chris's work while researching for my chat with Raghunath in episode 52, and I discovered he'd also had on Brad Warner and Miguel Chen from Teenage Bottle Rocket. I listened to all of those episodes on Chris's show, The Indie Spiritualist Podcast, and then read his newest book, Dead Set on Living, and became a fan. I liked his work instantly because not only does he like metal, punk rock, hardcore, and hip-hop music like me, but he's also a deeply curious, poignant, funny, and honest person. This conversation is the sound of two people with similar interests becoming friends on two microphones 390 miles apart. Simply put, had Chris and I grown up in the same town, we would have been friends. We talked about everything under the sun, from punk rock to psychedelics to writing and podcasting to meditation to addiction to Satanism, Ram Dass, heavy metal band, Lamb of God. There was no constraining us. So you should go get Chris's newest book, Dead Set on Living, from Simon & Schuster, and download his podcast, The Indie Spiritualist, which features about 80 hours of conversations with Ram Dass, Brad Warner, Mirabai Star, Damien Eccles, and many, many more. I sincerely hope you enjoy this conversation with Chris Grasso. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm a fan, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today for my show as well. And it just means a lot.
The feeling is definitely mutual. I'm seeing your little icon, and I see all the very nice religious iconography, and so I can tell right away you're my kind of dude. So
awesome,
good to connect.
And I'm wearing a Descendants T-shirt right now as well. So I'm a brother in tunes.
That's all actually a little salt in the wound because they just played here in Connecticut. And my friend's band opened for them, and I was out of state, and it really tore me apart. But loved the Descendants, so
yeah.
Anyways,
was it Wilhelm Scream?
No, they're Teenage Bottle Rocket.
Oh, dude, yes.
Miguel Chen, and anyone who's listening, please check out his work. And Rod Mead Sperry, who works for or runs Lion's Roar, Buddhist magazine, but they wrote a book together. That was phenomenal. They're working on a new book together. So cannot recommend them enough. Wilhelm Scream, another amazing band, and actually just turned my girlfriend onto what Wilhelm Scream actually means. And her mind was blown. So.
Yeah. It's like that Star Wars thing when they push the people off into the bottomless pit, right?
Yeah. It's in everything. I mean, The Hobbit, literally it's in, like 80% of movies have it, and it's pretty rad.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I see that you've also gotten some big fans that I'm also a fan of, like Randy Bly from Lamb of God was recently promoting your book, which I found really, really cool.
Yeah, he's a dude, what a good guy. Me, him and John Joseph from Cro-Mags, we're going to be doing some workshops together next year, which I'm jazzed about because I love Lamb of God, and you know, Randy is one of the best, in my opinion, best metal vocals ever. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And his autobiography of his time in Pancras, I guess it's called, yes, prison in Czech Republic. That book is absolutely amazing.
Yes, I saw the documentary and then I read the book and it's like, wow. I mean, the documentary is phenomenal, but yeah, the book, whoa.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so much respect to Randy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. And that's the thing. One real quick thing.
Yeah.
He's as real as it gets. Like, he is in one of the biggest metal bands ever, but he's such a real dude.
Yes.
And those are the kind of people, like, I really respect. So
yeah, a couple years ago, when he got out of prison, he went on tour almost immediately when he got home, and they were playing in Columbia, Missouri, and he was eating at this little Korean barbecue across the street from the venue called the Blue Note in Columbia, Missouri. And I went in and I, you know, after he was done eating, I said, "Hi, I'm really glad you guys are here." And he was just the nicest guy. And so I agree. And I also hear him talked about a lot on Jamie Josta's podcast as well, which is a lot of fun.
Yes, of course. And I well, I'm from Connecticut, so I grew up playing in bands that toured with Hatebreed all the time, and know Jamie well. Good dude. Yeah, man, it's cool to see, like, people from the scene that are legit still to this day. You know, they've made it and they're still human beings. That's what matters. So.
Absolutely. Very cool. And that was my thing as well, growing up in high school. You know, I grew up in the punk scene, and then I've come to all of this podcasting and teaching and stuff way later on in my life. But, you know, having conversations with folks like you who come from sort of the same kind of roots is just an immediate bond. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand for sure.
And so I'm really glad to talk to you today. So really quick, can you just kind of go ahead and tell the audience who you are and just a very, very brief introduction to some of what you do?
Yeah, man, you caught me at a funny time, to be honest with you, and I'm glad you did. You know, my name is Chris Grosso. I've written some books. I've played in some bands. I've recorded some albums. I've spoken at some pretty big festivals with quote-unquote A-list spiritual teachers, and you know, I found myself recently, like, really reevaluating all of that. And you know, I'm always grateful for the opportunity to help other people, but when it comes, you know, to the bigger stuff, I don't know, man, it's not resonating so much with me. So that said, I do workshops with teenagers at least 3 times a month. I was very blessed to teach last month with I think I mentioned I live in Connecticut, and I got to go in and teach the police academy, the cadet academy, some meditation techniques, and that was really meaningful. And yeah, I'm in a weird transition phase right now, to be honest, where, like, I want to pull back. Like, I love the fact that I've written these books and that they've helped people. And I mean, legit, every day I get such meaningful emails or whatever from people, social media messages that, you know, they've read the book, whether they were directly affected or they have a loved one that was. That means the world to me. So I'm conflicted because, like, I'm glad that I'm helping people like that. But at the same time, going back to the punk rock thing, man, like, I don't want to be like some. I've never called myself a spiritual teacher. I never, ever will. I just want to be someone who helps someone. And it does, you know, it does bother me a little when I feel like people are putting me up on a pedestal inadvertently, not that they are intentionally doing it. But I don't like that. And, so yeah, I'm in a weird phase. And, one thing I think anyone who's listening to this knows about me is I'm always transparent, and, I don't bullshit. So
yeah,
that's where I'm at right now today. There you go.
You know, one of the things that I've explored some of your work, I've listened to a bunch of your podcast episodes, and I've read one of your books cover to cover, and the thing that you remind me of is just a curious, open-minded person who is willing to try stuff and be very open about it. So, that's really interesting to me as well that you say that you don't see yourself as a spiritual teacher, because I kind of see you as someone that I have a lot in common with, just a curious dude with a lot of open-mindedness and questions.
And I think I'm not Buddhist, I'm not anything, but one thing I do like is going back to kind of what the Buddha said was, dude, check it out for yourself. If it works, rad. If not, move on, find what does. And the funny thing is, moving from those punk rock and hardcore ethos into a deeper exploration into life. It's funny. I meet so many punkers and hardcore kids and, well, not kids anymore. We're old men with gray hair, but, it's like we were interested in that at an early age because something inside of us was calling for something more, and I know that was the case for me. And, I'm grateful to this day. I love punk. I love hardcore. I still play music. I still play in bands. I still listen to it every day. And I attribute wholeheartedly my spiritual evolution, quote unquote, whatever that means to anyone, to punk rock and hardcore music. So whether that is reading the Bhagavad Gita or the Dhammapada or some Vedanta teachings, it's just I'm looking what's underneath, what's going on underneath. And then we get really esoteric and it's like, well, wait a minute, there is actually no you looking underneath. Yeah. So I know I'm jumping way ahead there, but
that's fine. And you know what? Like that ethos, the way that those formative years of music shape you and me, that never leaves you. Like I'm a 35-year-old guy sitting here in my Descendants t-shirt, and I've got like a box of t-shirts next to me, like Propaganda and Face to Face. And,
yes. Hold on. Yeah. Can we take a minute to say Propaganda? Never, ever, ever has gotten enough respect. And I fought so many friends, not physically, but like from How to Clean Everything up through everything. They are one of the most amazing bands ever. And I'm so glad you said that because I don't know how people don't love them. They're musically geniuses, lyrically geniuses. They're phenomenal.
I'm going to one up you and say that they are my raddest band of all time. And do you know who concurs with me? Brendan Kelly from the Lawrence Arms is very open in stating that that Propaganda is hands down the raddest band of all time.
There is nothing from bass to guitar to drums to lyrics to even when they just replaced their guitarist not that long ago.
Yeah.
They found an amazing female to fill in. Like, come on, man. They are the shit.
They're legit. Yeah, they're the best. And I'm a gigantic, gigantic Propaganda fan. And whenever I say things to like my friends, like, if I could only listen to one song for the rest of my life, it would be Speculative Fiction. They all scoff at me. And I'm like, dude, that can you get a better song? I don't see it happening.
Yeah. I remember it was the millennium, actually 99. And I was at a party with my friends, a bunch of hardcore kids. And, they're playing their music and I put on How to Clean Everything. And they were like, what's this bullshit? And I'm like, no, listen, listen to the music, listen to the words. And anyways, I don't know if any of them ever came around, but God bless Propaganda. And they would probably curse me for saying that because we know how they feel about God, but they're amazing.
Yeah, but they've taught you so much, and they've taught me so much as well. The introduction of ideas that I got strictly from Propaganda and from Bad Religion alone, those two bands just by themselves is irreplaceable. I mean, arguably more influential than any like K-12 education I had in social studies or English.
Yeah.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, my whole my fiance and I joke often about I going through high school, I had a horrible experience. I was like that outcast punk rock kid, like, you know, and I'm in a small rural town. I graduated with maybe like 50 kids tops in my class. And, they give each, senior a, I leave blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, like I leave John with, you know, Tootsie Rolls or whatever. Mine, we just rediscovered this a few weeks ago, and it's so apropos for this conversation. Yeah. And my girlfriend or fiance, whatever, she won't let me live it down. I wrote, I think it was verbatim, I, Chris Grasso, leave after having dealt with 4 years of lies shoved down my throat.
Is that like, in your yearbook?
Yes. And they legit printed that. Not only that, but then you go back to my actual yearbook. You know, you have your picture and your favorite blah, 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 and your pet peeves. My pet peeves, I named my high school, and they printed that. I don't know what the fuck, but
well,
anyways,
credit where credit is due for them actually putting that in the yearbook.
I think they were just honestly, I don't think they were doing due diligence, but yeah. It's all right.
Well, you know, okay, so all this matters because the way that I discovered your work in the first place, like, I don't know, a little over a year ago, like, you're really a fairly new person as far as, like, the media, the books that I read, the podcasts I listen to. You're kind of new in my life, and I'm glad I found you. But the reason I found you is because you and I have three things in common.
Okay.
We've had Miguel Chen, Brad yes. Warner, and yes. Raghunath on both of our podcasts.
Love all three.
Yep.
Brothers.
You
brothers
know what?
In arms.
And so the reason I found you is because when I put out Brad Warner, I found out all the other episodes that he'd been on, and he's been on the Indie Spiritualist, your podcast, and yep. then we both have had Raghunath, and we both had Miguel Chen. Yep. And I love that, and that is how I found you, and you never know what kind of connection these little similarities are going to lead to. You know what I mean?
Dude, life is so weird. I was... That just reminded me really quickly. I've taught at the Wanderlust festivals a bunch of times, you know, those big fancy yoga, blah, blah, blah things. And I was in West Virginia like 2 years ago, and I'm there. I was scheduled to give two talks and two workshops, and I get there and I'm looking at the schedule, and who else is there but my man, Raghunath. I'm like, holy shit, Ray's here. So, you know, we got to kick in, talk about Youth of Today and, you know, Shelter and Better Than Thousand, whatever. Like, it was rad. So, yes, life is weird and these circles are weird. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier is like, there is a calling for some of us, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. And it's just pulling us deeper. And then, here we are years later. And
the thing that I got the most from my conversation with Raghunath is I basically went through the Bhagavad Gita and pulled quotes left and right that spoke to me for whatever reason. And then I asked for his interpretation of those quotes. And I essentially had an hour long conversation with him on this podcast about exactly that. Like, what did you get out of the conversation with those three dudes, Miguel, Brad, Raghunath? Like, what do you gain from these experiences on your show?
Cool. Great question. I am no scholar of the Gita. I definitely appreciate it. One of the most interesting things I've ever found was when I had Duncan Trussell on my show.
Oh, love him.
Yeah, he's amazing. He knows the Gita, and he can interpret it in a way that I've rarely heard, but side note. So anyways, when I had Ray on the show, we just kicked it. Like, we didn't talk about – I mean, we talked about the Gita, blah, blah, blah. But we talked about, like, being human beings and trying to be good human beings and living in the world today and how obviously it's not an easy thing. And, you know, he has this beautiful farm in upstate New York, and I am an asshole because he's invited me there a million times and I have not been able to make it. But, you know, so he's doing his part. As far as Miguel, I don't even remember how I met Miguel, but he was like, he was an instantly a brother. And I remember prior to him writing his book, I Want to Be Well, you know, he reached out to me, and even though he was working with Rod from Lion's Roar, who's love Rod, big shout out to him, amazing guy. You know, Miguel was like, I don't know what to do. What do I do? How do I write this book? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, I don't know how to write a book. Like, shit, I have two or three out. I still don't know how. But I tried to stumble my way through it, which is kind of, again, that punk ethos. Like, we just figure it out as we go along. Miguel, what I will tell you is, you know, he's had a lot of heavy hardships in his life. I mean, who amongst us haven't? He shared candidly about his sister and just a lot of heavy stuff. So, you know, he wrote with Rod a fantastic book that I was humbled to be asked to endorse. And it means the world to me that they did that. I cannot wait. They're working on a new book right now. I don't want to say anything more than that because that's for them to talk about. But they're working on a new book, and it's going to be coming out soon, and sounds absolutely amazing. And then Brad, as far as Brad goes, man, here's what I love about Brad.
Yeah.
He is – you talk about no bullshit. That dude's no bullshit.
Like, oh, totally.
Yeah. I love – I think my favorite book of his – most people say Hardcore Zen or Sit Down, Shut Up, whatever. But I think my favorite book is There Is No God and He's Always With You.
That's mine too. I love that book.
All right. There we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, he really gets into some stuff. And I mean, he always does. And I deeply appreciate him for that. I mean, it would be ridiculous for me to say that he's not been a very big influence in my life, because he has. I have all his bookshelves or his books on my bookshelf. The only thing, and I would say this to him to his face, is like sometimes when he gets on his videos or his blogs recently, I feel like, you know, he's like, they didn't invite me to do this or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And look, I get it. Like, I want to word this carefully. Yes, he wasn't invited because he tells it like it is. And that's why I love him.
Yeah.
But to, you know, to go to the point to make multiple videos or blog posts about it. I mean, I get it if it's one or two, maybe, but that's the only thing I would say. Other than that, though, Brad Warner is the man. I deeply respect him, and awesome.
Can I ask you a specific question about a thing that Brad's been really prominent for lately?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so you and I sort of conversed on Facebook a few months ago when the whole Lion's Roar thing was going down.
Yep.
With the psychedelic drugs and everything.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I am curious if you ever came out on one side of that, because I know that you and Duncan Trussell have talked a lot about it, but there was a lot of controversy with Brad and Lion's Roar and Vince Horn and Buddhist Geeks. Now, I have no dog in that fight, but I feel that Brad made a really compelling case about psychedelics and it having no place in Buddhist practice. Like, did you ever come out on one side of that or the other? I'm just curious.
No, and I think you and I are the same. And here's the, I'll take the easy way out. I'm not Buddhist, so.
Right, neither am I, exactly.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I 100% heard what Brad was saying. The fifth precept, no intoxicants, period. Like, I understand it. You know, like, even though I'm sober, I still see quote unquote, you know, hardcore Buddhists that are getting drunk or high all the time. And okay, I'm not going to judge that. However, me not being Buddhist, like I said, having a deep reverence for Buddhism, if I'm looking at that conversation specifically, I would say Brad's in the right. You have these teachers promoting psychedelics from a lineage that doesn't. Now, on the flip side of that, I will also say I have personally years ago deeply benefited from psychedelics. And I know many people who have benefited from psychedelics. And I'm not talking about just partying. I'm talking about like people that did them to try to, you know, or not try to, just working on altering their consciousness. And what I respect about Brad is he even said like, hey, man, I don't know if he still does or not, but he was saying how like I smoke medical marijuana. So he's like, look, I'm not saying don't do this. I'm just saying don't do it under a Buddhist precept.
Mm-hmm.
And that can't be argued with, man. Like, unless like the Dalai Lama says, you know, Buddhism is always open. You know, if science ever proves it wrong, whatever, we will change this or that, which is cool. I think Brad was right. But again, just, you know, I'm playing both sides of the coin because even though I don't do psychedelics, like I know the benefit they had in my life. I have seen the benefit that they have truly had in other people's lives. And, there's no such thing as a blanket statement. I would never make one. Like, to each their own. Just please be safe. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, that was such an interesting debate. And I'm glad to be able to chat with you about that, because I saw you following it as well, and it was really interesting.
It
really
was.
Interesting. And then your chapter in the book with Duncan Trussell kind of goes into that as well, and I found that to be very fascinating too.
Yeah.
Can we talk about your book, your newest one?
No, we absolutely cannot.
Dang it.
Yeah, dude.
Okay.
What do you want?
All right, so you're the author. You got three books, right?
Yeah.
And your most recent one, Dead Set on Living. And this book is like raw, dude. It is full of hurt and experiences that are pretty overwhelming. And like, you open this book with this relapse story. When did that happen? Like, what was this year that you wrote about in your introduction?
I think that was like 2015. And yeah, man, that was that. I've come close to death more than one time, but that was the closest. So yeah, that was like 2015 that happened.
Did you start your podcast after that happened?
Oh man, good question. No, I didn't. Because I was doing it in Canada, where I was living, shortly before I moved back to the United States. So no, I did not.
Much love to our Canadian friends. I live on the border in Buffalo, so I'm a big fan of my neighbors.
Big ups.
Yeah. Okay. So this book, you've got like, there's like 19 guest conversations where you talk to all kinds of people. So my big question is, I noticed that I was listening to your Damien Eccles interview podcast episode, and then I read the chapter, and I noticed that you base the chapter on the conversation that you and Damien had on the podcast. Is that like what every chapter is based on in the book, is like a conversation that you've had for the show as well?
No, actually, a lot of the conversations weren't on the show at all. Some of the chapters that were there, we edited them down, and then I was able to take a lot of stuff that they felt weren't, I don't want to say applicable, but yeah, I don't know, just for time constraints, whatever, didn't fit the show. So I was able to take like all of this, not all, a lot of unused material and put it to paper. And not just that, but like really I revisited these after the conversation. I talked to every person in the chapter. We revisited the conversation. We kind of edited. We, do you agree with what you said? Would you edit it at all? Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, we had a really or I had at least a really a nice time doing that. And it was weird because it was my first book writing one as such. But as you could kind of gather earlier, man, I'm just kind of spent on my own voice. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Are you okay? So, how did you land on like these guests? I mean, because you have so many people that you've talked to. How did you like land on the people that you did? Because one of the things I noticed is that there is a huge range of diversity within the book, as far as like different belief systems, sure, different practices. How did you land on the people that you did?
Well, all right. So that doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of things I appreciate or people I appreciate or their teachings. But really, I looked at either conversations I had with people or ones that I wanted to have with people, based on, what they had to say. And, you know, whether it's spiritual, not spiritual, music, art, to me, I will say this, Ram Dass, one of my favorite quotes of his, it's all grist for the mill. And I absolutely do believe that. So, you know, like for me, my life teaching, it's funny, man. We're sitting here, I'm looking around my apartment. If somebody walked in here right now, they'd be like, whoa. Because it's like, you see Shiva, you see Buddha, you see Jesus, but to be honest with you, you see a lot of, and maybe Seinfeld and whatever, Mystery Science Theater. But then aside from that, you see a lot of like horror characters, like, sure, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, some of the Stranger Things characters, coffins, skulls, like, you know, it's just... My original Tony Hawk skateboard from 1988.
Oh, sweet.
Is hanging up on my wall. But I am a student of life, period. And if I decide that life can only be taught here or there or there, then man, what a shitty life that would be.
What's the point, right?
Exactly. So, no, legit, like whether it's a specific spiritual tradition, a style of music, a style of art or film, like I love life. And I just, man, like I love it.
One of the things that I saw that you recently did that I wanted to ask you about is your trip to the Satanic Temple in Salem, Massachusetts.
Hell yeah.
Man,
yeah.
Tell me about that trip, because everything you just said, you are open to ideas and things that might scare people. And, and I think that that's so interesting. So go ahead and tell me about that trip there, because I'm super curious.
Happy to talk about it, because a lot of people hear the word Satan and freak out. I have actually on my website years ago, I interviewed Magus, something Gilmore. He took over for Anton LaVey out of the New York chapter. Now, here's two very big differences. There is the Satanic Church, which is in New York, and then there is the Satanic Temple, which is based out of Salem. And there actually is a big difference. The Satanic Temple, they might have some similarity in tenets or whatnot, but what they do is so much good for humanity. Like, they're fighting for LGBTQ rights. They're fighting for, literally, like, any right you can kind of think of, they are out there fighting for it. They're offering after-school programs for kids that, don't want to have Jesus shoved down their throat. And, hey, I love Jesus. I do. But also, I kind of like Baphomet. He's a good dude. Like, I have an affinity for both. So when I went to the Satanic Temple, again, it is not about you know, hail Satan, kill people, blah, blah, blah. No, it's legit about, like, let's make this world a better place. And I encourage anyone listening, please check out their website, the Satanic Temple. I think it's .com, might be .org. I'm not affiliated. I'm not sponsored by them. I bought a T-shirt, took a picture on Baphomet, but I have no legit affiliation. They're just good people trying to do good things. And I resonate with that because they're like an alternative approach. You know, like I went in there and it was like the 13-year-old Chris wearing that Cro-Mags T-shirt, like walking in like, yeah, hey, cool. But they are lovely people. And besides that, Salem, Massachusetts, absolutely phenomenal town.
I had some guests on a few months ago to talk about the philosophy of Satanism in modern society, and it was Alexandra and Zachary James, and they're in a doo-wop band called Twin Temple out of Los Angeles.
Nice.
And they're fantastic. But the whole entire conversation was about gender equality and freedom of speech under the First Amendment. And it was super fascinating because that's kind of what you see if you go to their website and you look up like the guiding philosophies on the website, like you just mentioned.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. Because a lot of people, and I'm not dissing the Church of Satan. I have no affiliation with either, but what most people think of as Satanism is, you know, kind of correct. Like, it's all about the flesh, you know, like just feel good, do what feels good. It's not about sacrifice, but, you know, like just live for the moment because you only live once, blah, blah, blah. That's the Church of Satan in New York. And again, no disrespect to them, but the Satanic Temple in Salem, totally different thing. They have tenants. They are legitimately like fighting the good fight in the world. And I couldn't support them enough. Just like if I went to, some Buddhist temple or some mystic Christian temple that is doing the same thing, which I have done and am friends with those people that are, you know, fighting. They're basically saying the same thing just from different perspectives. So it's like, cool, man. Like, let's just make humanity better. Let's help each other out. Let's be there for one another.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. I mean, the incredible diversity that you have spoken to, like in your book and with the guests on your show. I mean, you talk to Mona Hayter, and you have Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus, and then practitioners of ceremonial magic like Damien Eccles, like we mentioned earlier. And it seems like you have explicitly set yourself the goal of talking to folks from a diverse range of very committed practice in whatever tradition it may be, you know?
Absolutely. Yes. As long as, yes, if their heart is in it, if it's something they truly believe in, 100%. Like Mona, like you mentioned, I adore her. I've been blessed to teach with her a few times, you know, this beautiful Muslim woman who knows her traditions so well. And then Damien, someone who comes from magic, which has nothing to do with Satanism or whatever. That's a practice that saved him from 15 years in solitary confinement, let alone the additional years in prison, you know, and it saved him. And not only that, now he's sharing it with other people in the hopes that, hey, I hope it can help you. I mean, I just saw a dude did a freaking event with Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam.
Sweet.
And then a week later, a week before with someone from the Dixie Chicks. And it's like, you know, man, yeah, cool. Like, whatever. As long as it's helping other people, just help other people. That's all.
Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me of your conversation with Duncan Trussell in the book. And because he encourages everyone to experiment for yourself, do the work, find out what works and what doesn't. And instead of getting all caught up in like robes and symbols,
yeah,
do the work. Like, yeah. What are you experimenting with right now with good success? I know you mentioned you're in a transition yourself. Like, what are you experimenting? Are you taking this advice from Duncan and trying some stuff out and putting stuff through the ringer?
Yeah, great question. I wouldn't say I'm taking Duncan's advice, but I would recommend others do. No, what I'm doing right now, to be totally honest with you, is basically nothing. I do meditate, and because that's like a core thing for me. But other than that, I've just been reading so much Advaita, non-dual books that it's like, you know what? Let's just see what happens. Like, my practice is open my eyes. And when I walk out the door, keep my eyes open. When I walk down the street, keep my eyes open. When I get to an appointment, keep my eyes open. Like, that's my practice. If I get on my skateboard, cool, man. What's going on when you're on your skateboard? That is my practice. Aside from that, yes, always a meditation, a formal, just because for me, that helps. I take 20 minutes, you know, I used to do an hour, whatever, you know, do 5 minutes, I don't care, but I like to take 20 minutes to quiet my mind, just be easy. But aside from that, my practices open my eyes and see what's happening through them. And even the word my eyes, I don't mean to be esoteric, but quotations, just see what's happening through these eyes that are in this body that's happening to be here on this earth in this day. And let's see where it goes from there.
Your body is very much rented for a very, very limited amount of time, isn't it?
Yeah, legit.
Man, and like something I also really admire about your books and your work is like you talk about like struggle and like the real struggle of what it means to be alive in this, as I just said, rented body. To give a shout out to my former teacher, Sato Ray Ronci, who wrote a book of poems by that title. What are you struggling with these days? Because your book is about struggle, but it's like three and a half, 4 years in the past now. Like, what's going on now?
Every day I still deeply struggle with, and it's so funny, not funny, but it's like, I have to laugh at it. My lack of self-worth, my lack of self-love. I just got engaged a month ago and I have been struggling with feeling like I am worthy of being a partner to this absolutely incredible woman. I'm not saying it's a 24/7 struggle, but it is, and that's part of the practice. Like I said, you know, like look through the eyes, see what's happening. Like I wake up and where is that struggle really coming from? Like, sure, there's deeply rooted stuff there. I do EMDR therapy weekly and I'm grateful for that. But aside from that, what is that struggle? Like, why? Why do I feel so unworthy? Why, honestly, man, like, why do I feel like such a piece of shit sometimes? Mm-hmm. Why do I feel like I'm not worthy of this lovely woman who loves me in a way that I've never been loved before? And that's to be honest, yeah, that's my big struggle today.
Man, you know, and that reminds me. So I'm dealing with some stuff too myself. Back in June, my family moved from Missouri to Buffalo, New York. And like in June of 2015, I went vegetarian and I didn't struggle at all until June of 2018 when I was moving across the country. So moving is like the worst thing ever. And I was stressed, like at capacity, and I pulled up at my friend's house in Indianapolis, and he had a Meat Lover's pizza delivered to his house because he didn't know what diet I adhered to.
Yeah.
And I am like at peak, like stress, and I tore into that Meat Lover's pizza, and I devoured like 3/4 of this thing, and I hadn't had a piece of meat in like 3 years, and I never struggled with it at all. And then ever since then, man, I've been eating McDonald's and buffalo wings and pepperoni pizza and fish sandwiches and hot dogs, and it is a vicious spiral of shame and hatred. And it's like, not every day since June, but like a lot of days since June, man, I've been diving into some buffalo wings and beating myself up the entire time that I'm eating them because I don't want to eat them, but here I am doing it, you know, and it's excruciating.
You're opening a big can of worms here, but I will say this. I am not vegetarian.
That's
fine.
I
was for 12 years. Actually, I was vegan for like 8 and then vegetarian the rest. But what I will say is...
So tell me about that detransition, because I want to go back to it, but I'm also trying not to drive myself crazy with shame in the interim whenever I'm in this delicate place.
Here's what I do, man. And this is me again. I cannot stress to anyone who's listening. This is just what I do. I'm not telling anyone listening, like, this is the way. This is just what Chris does. Right now... and for the past couple of years, I have felt okay eating meat. And I know, you know, I can hear already, I can hear some of your listeners screaming. And that's okay. And I honor your screams. But here's the thing. We're all unique individuals. Our bodies need different things. Yes, granted, I know, like, the studies have been done. The world would be better if we stopped eating meat. I'm not here to argue that at all. I respect that and I honor that. What I am saying is, again, we're each unique individuals. So speaking specifically to you in your case, I wouldn't, if you're going to keep eating meat, I'm not saying keep going to McDonald's or KFC or, you know, wherever you mentioned, maybe you could start working it more towards free range or, you know, something like that. And then from there, if your heart feels called to, you can digress and, you know, move back to a, you know, a more grain-based diet. But, man, we're each unique individuals. I struggle with this too, man. I eat meat. Look, I do. And I do feel guilty. I'm not going to lie. Like, I do. There are times I don't. But a lot of time I do. Because I had so many years of veganism and vegetarianism. And so part of me 100% does believe that, like, inside there is a part of me saying, you need this kind of protein in your body right now. Okay. But then there's another part of me. It's like, you know, ouch, you know, from the animals.
Right.
And the only thing, the last thing I will say, and this is no justification one way or another, but one thing that always has stuck with me, and you and your listeners can take this with a grain of salt, but believe in him or not, supposedly, that guy named Jesus said at one point, it is more important what comes out of your mouth than what goes into it. And so, sure, maybe that's a scapegoat, you know, saying I use, I don't know, but I do. Like, I remember that a lot. And if there are times I'm guilty or not guilty, feeling guilty, I just remember, okay, maybe I ate something I shouldn't have, but what am I putting out into the world that, you know, gave me sustenance to do? And yeah, I get it. I could have gotten the sustenance from quinoa or whatever. I know. I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just being real. That's where I'm at.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. That was, you know, that was just like a way to think about how life throws curveballs, and the way that we handle those curveballs is so imperfect for every person.
Always, man.
You know? All right. So I definitely think that, like, people should check out your books Indie Spiritualist, Everything Mind, Dead Set on Living. So you've had like so many cool conversations with people on your podcast. What books do you recommend that people check out by your past guests, or like what are some episodes that you think that new listeners to you might be interested in checking out if they like what they're hearing from you today?
Ah, man, that's a fair question. I appreciate that. I would say as far as podcasts go, the two of the more recent ones, actually, John Joseph from Cro-Mags was a real legit, like, straight up conversation. And my homie Joshua Coburn, cannot recommend him enough. Joshua Coburn. If you are looking for any kind of inspiration, like, that's it. And the podcast with him, it just aired, actually, I think last week. But aside from that, books, man, I don't like to recommend spiritual books because, you know, everyone's so different. Yeah, I have my favorites like Ram Dass and Ken Wilber, whatever. But if you're going to read a good book, pick up Yukowski. Pick up Palahniuk. Pick up, man, I don't know, so many good ones. Hunter Thompson, like, those are the readers like I like to read. The Last Night of the Earth poems by Charles Bukowski, hands down my favorite book. Can't recommend that one enough.
Nice. Anything else spring to mind? Because I'm just going to add my reading list too. Because I'm looking to get outside of some spirituality as well. I need some new stuff. I've been stuck in like the same trend of reading for like the last year or so because of the show.
Oh, yeah. Understand. Sure, man. I mean, If you check out Mark Z. Danielewski.
Oh, yeah. House of Leaves, right?
House of Leaves, yeah. And he just started a whole new thing, The Familiar, a whole bunch of stuff there. Of course, Hunter Thompson, who I'm sure you're familiar with. Hell's Angels is one of my favorites that he did. William Burroughs, anything by him, but, you know, Junkie, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, man, I don't know. Chuck Klosterman, I love anything Chuck Klosterman writes. Fantastic. Like, yeah.
Nice. Okay, what's upcoming for you? What do you got coming up?
as little as possible.
Are you going into like sort of like a hiatus for a bit?
Yeah, man, I'm trying to. Like, I got, I don't know. As weird as after all this conversation sounds, I'm going to be speaking like in Silicon Valley next year. But I am kind of stoked because it's at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which is Edgar Mitchell's thing. So, yeah, I'll be out there with the fucking weirdo Facebook. I don't know. Whoever's out there. No, but other than that, yeah, my... I am honestly taking it slow. My friend Jessica Pimentel and I, she's one of the stars of, what is it?
Orange is the New Black, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a good friend. We're going to be doing a workshop at Alex Gray's Cosm. Aside from that, me and Randy Bly and John Joseph are going to be doing a workshop there as well. Totally separate.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, like other than that, I'm just trying to like do local Connecticut stuff. I don't know. I do have a book that I'm pretty excited about the idea on, but I don't know, man. I'm just here, like,
yeah.
As if I had not made it clear enough, I don't like the whole, you know, hey, you've written books, you've done this or that, like whatever bullshit. I don't like that. So,
you know, I love that about you though, because I had like this gigantic list of specific questions about the book that like I could have gone into, but instead we just had a normal conversation.
I can't thank you enough about that then, sir, because I would have much rather done this than that.
Yeah.
And we can do another show and I will answer those questions. Like, I respect you enough to do it, but let's be real. Like, let's talk. What's going on in life?
I love it. All right. Well, Chris, where can people find you if they want to, like, you know, give you some love?
Nowhere. I'm taking all of my social media down.
Dude, that would honestly be the healthiest thing in the world, I think.
I honestly am like halfway there, but no. If anyone does give a shit, and I appreciate it if they do, theindiespiritualist.com. And from there you can find, you know, the Facebook, the Instagram, the blah, blah, blah. But the one thing I will say, man, I know I've been kind of self-deprecating, but I will say this. I did write 3 books, and I have, over the course of 5 years, gotten a ton of touching, very deeply touching feedback about those books, whether it's from people struggling with addictions or depressions or mental health issues, or family members that were just trying to understand it better. So, you know, I'll shit on myself all day, but I got to say, like, I'm grateful that those books are in the world, because they do seem to be helping people. And that is, at the end of the day, that's where my heart's at. I just want to help people.
You know, and there's a voice in there that I recognize a lot in your book. And I think about a lot of the high school students that I've taught for the last like 10, 12 years. And I could see a lot of them, you know, understanding your voice. So I'm glad that your voice is out there.
I do appreciate that. And good to know you're teaching, because a little exclusive for you.
Sweet.
I'm creating the one thing I am doing is creating a new curriculum for teenagers, and the board. I don't think you go wrong with this board. You got Randy from Lamb of God. You got John from Cro-Mags. You got Kane Hodder, who played Jason Voorhees. You got, I think Russell Brand's going to be on board.
Oh my God.
You got, like, there's so many great people, like, on this board. They're all advisors. And I've brought them together to help me create just this initiative, this real, like, program that kids actually give a shit about and will want to do. So yeah, man, maybe we could stay in touch about that as well.
Very nice. You should also, maybe to get a little Buffalo connection going on, you should talk to Keith Buckley from Every Time I Die. He's a novelist, and you could reach out to him and see if he's got any ideas for some writing stuff.
Love it. Hey, man, make the connection happen. I'm asking you.
Oh, God. Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, Chris, I know that I've kept you for an hour today. I'm super grateful to you for your time. This has been an absolute pleasure for me. And, you know, I'm going to keep following your work, and I look forward to everything in the future that you're going to do, wherever your path takes you.
Awesome, man. Thank you. And thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for putting this sort of material into the world. We need it now more than ever. Not my voice specifically, but just these kinds of ideas. So thank you, man.
It has been rad.
Yes, it has.
Classical Ideas is produced, recorded, and edited by me, Greg Soden. Music on this episode of Classical Ideas was written by Patrick Ritter and performed by Patrick Ritter and Greg Soden. If you like Classical Ideas, please rate it on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter at classical_ideas or on Facebook at facebook.com/classicalideaspodcast. You can email me at classicalideas@outlook.com. Thanks for listening.